Spring has sprung, and one of the clear sounds of the season after the birds was the sound of revving engines, especially as motorcycle riders took advantage of the warmer weather. There will be lots of engines revved in the warm season, and some might sound just a little funny or clunky. Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive, and he's our partner in a monthly segment we call the Squeaky Wheel. In this context, you are the squeaky wheel. Give us a call or email to talk about automotive issues you have had or are currently having. 800-838-3760 by phone. 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Zach Edwards, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
So as we closed a month ago, you were advising people interested in getting their cars tuned up for potentially the travel season. We hope there is such a full thing. On making their appointments for car maintenance and repair, have a bunch of people taking you up on the advice?
We are very busy, yes, indeed, and talking with other shop owners as well. It sounds like, you know, it's pretty universal across the board. Everyone's busy right now, so yeah.
So what are the major points of maintenance if somebody's just coming in to get stuff taken care of? I mean, you want to get your oil changed if it's time for that, that sort of thing, but what are some of the other sub-maintenance items to look for?
Well, every car's kind of different in terms of where it's at in its lifespan and how it's been driven or maybe not been driven. So, and that's one of the more difficult challenges in our industry is that it's not, the remedy for each car is different. And it's really hard to field questions, having not seen a person's car. And so when people do call and ask, you know, what should I do? It's usually our answer is very basic, you know, make an appointment so that we can get a look at the car, and because every car needs different stuff based on its, you know, its point in its life. But yeah, certainly, you know, internal combustion engines still have spark plugs, and hybrid engines have spark plugs too. And, you know, most, I don't know of any cars that actually have spark plug wires anymore, and obviously no ignition points anymore. But there's just a lot of fluid maintenance, and it's always good to check brakes and check the condition of tires and take the car for a spin and see if you, you know, a technician can take the car for a drive and see if they hear anything funny, because noises, as you mentioned in your intro, noises are really a telltale sign something's going on if you're hearing a strange noise you're not used to hearing. So those are some of the methods we use to try and give good advice.
So pay attention to those things that are going
exactly.
And in fact, it seems like the people who are good mimics of their car's sounds probably get better outcomes.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, along the same, you know, conversation in maintenance, there's been a rash of catalytic converter thefts lately.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all over the country, actually, my folks are visiting from the Midwest, and they've been experiencing a surge in catalytic converter thefts in Iowa, Minnesota, all the way over to the West Coast, and I'm sure to the East Coast as well. And, you know, maintenance, when done at the proper interval, will actually preserve the lifespan or lengthen the lifespan of a car's catalytic converter. And so this doesn't really have anything to do with the theft of them, but you know, the catalytic converters have that what they do is they convert harmful emissions to carbon dioxide and water, and they do that by means of precious metals. And when you haven't done regular maintenance, like changing your spark plugs at the recommended interval, and that's the interval recommended by the manufacturer, that creates a lot of stress on the catalytic converter to try and convert more harmful emissions into less harmful emissions. And so oftentimes I remember seeing and talking to other technicians that pull a spark plug out and say, oh, it looks fine. I don't know why these manufacturers recommend changing them at 75,000 miles. They look perfectly fine. Well, it's because even though they look perfectly fine, there's a certain amount of wear and tear that's happened over the course of 75,000 miles, which is a long time, by the way, for a spark plug. And they know that at that point, the spark plug's going to start to break down, and the effects are not very obvious to a driver or even a technician sometimes. So those types of things just get changed at recommended intervals nowadays in the attempt to extend the lifespan of a particular part of the car.
Now, you mentioned maintenance that affects the catalytic converter. Is there any actual maintenance on the catalytic converter?
No, there's nothing you can do for specific to the catalytic converter. That is a honeycomb type of element that's inside of a cavity in your exhaust pipe. And so the cavity looks very much like a muffler. Mufflers just have baffles that where the sound gets trapped and bounced and kind of contained to reduce the noise. But inside that same looking device that's the catalytic converter, there's a honeycomb element in it. They call it a honeycomb because it looks just like a honeycomb. But that is coated, and somehow they inject that honeycomb with these precious metals or coat the honeycomb so that as the air passes through that, there are chemical reactions that take place and convert, hydrocarbons is one and carbon monoxide is another, and oxides of nitrogen. They convert those three harmful compounds into less harmful compounds like carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing you can really do, to answer your question, there's nothing you can do to directly help out your catalytic converter. It's kind of the last line of defense before stuff goes out the tailpipe. And so everything you can do to reduce the amount coming into the catalytic converter is going to make life easier on the catalytic converter, which is thereby going to extend the life of that converter.
So keep your engine burning as clean as possible, and you'll require less of your catalytic converter.
Yes, and as people are finding out, catalytic converters are incredibly expensive, and that's why there's a black market for them, for them stolen. Once your catalytic converter is ruined and you need to have it replaced, there's not much value in that catalytic converter because the precious metals that are inside there are pretty much depleted. But if someone steals a catalytic converter that's a well-functioning converter, that can have a lot of value because there's still a lot of precious metal inside of there. And there's a method where, a recycling method really, where they can break apart that catalytic converter, take the honeycomb out of it, and then try and extract whatever small amount of precious metals are still remaining in that honeycomb in order to reuse those metals.
Well, it sounds like a lot of work, but, when you're talking about prices for platinum and palladium, I guess there's a payoff if you do it in bulk, certainly.
Yep, I guess so. And, what's happening around here is, of course, the thieves are just selling the converters to a buyer who is, wherever they take that product, who knows? I'm sure the police would love to know that.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes less than 2 minutes for these thieves to be able to crawl under the car. Some cars, the Prius is a really, really popular car to be targeted by the criminals. So the Prius, sometimes you need to jack it up a little bit because they sit so low to the ground, but then they use a Sawzall and they can cut the catalytic converter, just crudely cut it right out of the car. And if there's any problems during that process, oftentimes they resort to wrapping a chain around the converter and hooking that up to a truck and just ripping it out from under the car, which causes a lot of damage.
Yeah, wow.
I've actually seen that on a couple of Nest doorbell cameras that have captured this whole process, and it just is so fast. So anyway. Hybrid owners, beware. It's happening a lot, especially, I think we did 5 converters in the last couple of weeks at
wow.
the shops.
So replacing putting them back where they were no longer there?
Yeah, there was 5 that were stolen that came to our shop. So there's certainly been more than that than in the Valley.
Wow.
And also there is a catalytic converter cover plate now that is available that we've been installing a lot. It's a special shield that just, you know, if you can, they always say if you can slow a criminal down, that's really good because they want to get in and out fast. And so this shield has a lot of bolts on it, and it, you know, it would slow them down by, you know, a couple of minutes at least, if not more.
Yeah.
And they've been pretty effective, so.
That's good to hear. Not to make it less than Sawzall easy. We're talking to Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive in our monthly segment called The Squeaky Wheel. If you've got questions, things to share about car maintenance, repair, whatever, join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We were talking about hybrids a little bit ago. You mentioned hybrid engines do have spark plugs, obviously. Is there any real appreciable difference between the gas engine that's in a hybrid and the gas engine that operates a car without help from electrics?
Not on the internal level. They work in the same way. The internal combustion engine is it's virtually the same, other than you know, the size is smaller. It doesn't need to be as big of an engine, and the start-stop technology is something that's relatively new on those particular cars. Now, lots of cars have the start-stop technology.
I noticed that. I'm hearing more cars coming away from stoplights with the engine starting up again.
Yeah. And even if they're not hybrids, they might have the start-stop technology. And for the listeners who don't know exactly what that is, it's just the car stops itself in an effort to reduce emissions. Everything that's being done with car technology is generally in an effort to reduce emissions. And so with a understanding that a lot of the emissions produced by vehicles are produced while the car is not even driving, they came up with the technology that, you know, to reduce emissions while a car is idling, like say in stop and go traffic in large metropolitan areas where a car might be sitting, not moving at all for minutes, you know, many minutes in the case of, you know, on the 405 in Los Angeles or something.
Oh,
so
yeah.
they've created this start-stop technology where the car will just shut itself off, but it has the capability of maintaining, you know, the air conditioning and the all of the creature comforts inside the cabin area. And then once the driver lets their foot off of the brake pedal and moves it to the gas pedal, the car quickly senses that and starts the car. And down the road you go. So there's a little bit of a lag. It's a little strange when you first move into one of those vehicles from, you know, the old kind that didn't turn themselves off at the stoplight. takes a little getting used to, but overall, it's just another technological advent that it actually seems to do pretty well for us also.
So how big do the batteries have to be now to be able to run the other services when the car engine is off sitting at a light?
Yeah, the batteries have gotten, there's more demand placed on vehicle batteries than before. And we're seeing, you know, I don't know exactly, you know, batteries are measured in a couple different ways. Cold cranking amps is one way, but, you know, how long a battery can sit idle is another way that they measure batteries. And so cars, I don't think that a battery can last much more than 3 weeks nowadays if you don't drive.
Really?
Because there's just so much, and of course that's a generalization. I mean, each car takes a certain amount of amperage while it's just sitting there in your garage, and every car is different. But it seems on average cars are the batteries are going dead faster and faster because there's so much going on. We talked about this last time, I think. There's just so much going on in the background while a car is sitting there in your garage. It's trying to keep all of these computers' memory.
Right,
live.
But you did point out that there's sort of like there's a standard for, you know, what the amperage draw will be when the car is off.
Yeah, and that standard, of course, is on the rise because there's just more things drawing amperage while the car is sleeping, so to speak.
So in addition to the batteries having to get bigger, I mean, if we're doing an engine that shuts off when you're standing still, starters have to be pretty robust, more robust than they used to be, I would think.
Yeah, and the starters are, they've been redesigned now, so they're not the typical starter that we used to see. They are designed to have a tremendous amount of starts in their lifetime. So that, you know, that was a new revelation. And if had they not made that change, of course, the starter would fail very quickly, because if you think about how many more starts that car is going to have, I mean, in just one day, if you're driving around town a lot, that car could start and stop 50 times.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and of course, that starter is more expensive than
yes.
an old starter
yes.
used to be. And so this is how car repair just gets more and more expensive, and as the technology gets more advanced. And but then what we're hoping for anyway is that the car is going to last longer as a result of the technology and thereby save us money, which I think works. And it's be interesting to quantify.
Right.
Or do like an advanced study on, are we actually saving money on cars?
Yeah,
I'm sure they're out there, but
the idea being that you spend a bunch up front because it'll cost you less over the life of the vehicle, but that's still a chunk of change to zap out at the beginning. We have an email here from Stephen and Eugene who says, "Dear Zach, someone tried to break into my van the other night. I've always hated car alarms and don't want to be that guy with the alarm going off all the time. Someone told me there are silent alarms that will notify my phone but not make a noise in the car and wake up the neighbors. Is there a good silent car alarm brand you recommend?"
I have not even heard of silent car alarms like that. So I'm sorry, but I don't have a recommendation. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a note here to try and read about that, because that's an interesting concept. Although I think that the loud car alarm, you know, that is the deterrent, is the ruckus that the alarm makes that mm-hmm. is meant to kind of spook off a thief. And so I think by the time you are alerted on your phone and you come running to the car, you know, it could be too late, maybe not.
That's something. Well, I'll put that on a list down for something to talk about for next month, for sure, to bring back up. So let's bring in a call here. Peter in Ashland, welcome to the Squeaky Wheel on the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, good morning. I have a question about a mid-80s Toyota camper that has been meticulously cared for, and yet, obviously, that's quite a few years ago that was made for.
Is this a Toyota Chinook?
It is, it's not a Chinook. I think it might be a Seabreeze. I'm not sure if that's right or not. I had a different vintage many years ago, an Odyssey, which was late 70s, mm-hmm. the chassis of that. But I'm curious, with this one that's been cared for so well, what would you be the most suspicious of it? And again, I think it's an 88.
Okay, 88. All right, thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, is it a manual or an automatic transmission, Peter?
I think it's automatic. I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah, so that would probably be the first thing I think of when I think of older, overweight, small chassis campers like those Toyota campers were. That, you know, there's a lot of weight on those Toyota platforms, and you know, a lot of those old Toyota trucks, they actually had 1-ton chassis, but still I would worry about the automatic transmission, because as we've talked about before, the automatic transmission technology in the 80s was really primitive, and the transmissions they just struggled in the later years or the later miles. They just didn't last a long time. And, you know, automatic transmissions nowadays are really, really remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, they were primitive, and they were very dependent on the fluid being kept in good shape and the cooler being in good shape. So that the automatic transmission cooler, which was located in the radiator. It's in a portion of the radiator where the fluid actually moves through the side of the radiator, and the coolant absorbs the heat that's transferred from the transmission fluid into the engine coolant. And so that's how the transmission fluid is kept cool. And when you have a radiator that's 40 years old or 30 years old, what we can find is that the radiator becomes partially restricted due to like calcification and like just all of the deposits that happen from
it's clogged, yeah.
Tap water usage over the years, and maybe coolant that was in poor shape, so you could have rust. I guess what I'm saying is I'd be worried about the transmission, but I'd also be worried about the radiator and the cooling system, those two things, because the cooling system just breaks down and hoses get old over the years, and all sorts of stuff like that can just start to leak or then they might not give you any sign and then just rupture one day when you're driving down the road. So that's what I'd want to look at first.
Thanks. About a minute left and time enough for Joy and Eureka to get in here on the squeaky wheel. Hi, Joy.
Hi. I appreciated, as a Toyota hybrid owner, I really appreciated the discussion on the catalytic converter and batteries. I've taken my Prius out for a drive about every couple of weeks, maybe 20 miles or so for the battery. But during the pandemic, I've only got about 2,000 miles during the whole year. And I was wondering what you would recommend for servicing. I'm sure below the recommended miles.
In about 15 seconds, Zach, that's about all we got.
Well, I would bring it into your shop and just tell them exactly what you told me and ask for their recommendations. Certainly, a trickle charger is really nice to install on Toyota Priuses.
That way
you can keep your battery charged in the event that you miss one drive cycle in that 2 or 3 weeks.
Zach Edwards, the Squeaky Wheel, thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you.